Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, a closer look at two policing incidents. The Pima County Sheriff's Office has been under scrutiny for an incident involving the sexual assault of a deputy at a private holiday party in December. Former Pima County Sergeant Ricardo Garcia is alleged to have sexually assaulted a female deputy at the party in his home. The interim complaint says that after drinking at the party, the female deputy needed to be helped into a guest bedroom to spend the night. Another deputy alleges they found Garcia return to the bedroom three separate times and lock the door. The witness deputy said they had to unlock the door with a plastic utensil each time to tell Garcia to stop. Garcia was arrested and fired in January. But in September, an internal investigation into the incident was suspended. The Pima County Deputies Organization, a group outwardly critical of Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos, released a statement in response to that and criticized the decision. That led the Pima County Board of Supervisors to ask the State Attorney General to investigate how Sheriff Nanos handled the situation. We sat down with the sheriff this week to discuss the matter. I started by asking him why the internal affairs investigation was put on hold.
I think if you asked across the country, pretty much every one of them would tell you that internal investigations are secondary to any criminal investigation. And there's rules of law that guide you on that. This is nothing new. We do this all the time. But more concerning to me was the fact that this rumor that somebody put out as a press release, we'd already heard about it back within days of the incident. And we had pretty much dismissed it at that time. She filed it in July. It just so happened that what she filed in July was almost the exact same verbiage we received in a claim for civil lawsuit in June. As far as the question of would I or wouldn't I investigate this, of course we'll investigate it, but we'll investigate it when it's appropriate to investigate it. Now is not the time. And to back that up or to support that, every attorney who has looked at this all said, the sheriff is doing the right thing. State law requires it. Federal law requires that these investigations be given second to any criminal, ongoing criminal investigation.
So let me make sure I'm clear so our listeners are clear on this. There is a criminal investigation into these allegations not being handled internally, being handled by Santa Cruz County. So there's somebody looking into it right now.
Absolutely. Correct.
Because that's one of the questions we've heard. Why is the sheriff's office doing the investigation? Shouldn't that have been outsourced, as so often happens within law enforcement?
It does.
And in this case, that's exactly what happened. It went to Santa Cruz.
Well, no, actually, the criminal case was taken to Santa Cruz. We conducted the criminal investigation. Our sex crimes team conducted the criminal investigation. We're a large criminal agency, law enforcement agency. We do criminal investigations all the time. If I ask Tucson police to investigate every time somebody's arrested for something, criminal speeding, DUI, domestic violence, we too make mistakes. We too can find ourselves in serious situations that can be criminal in nature. I can't just pass them out every time that happens, and I certainly don't want them passing them out to me either. This was a very serious case that we recognized immediately. I didn't need an internal investigation to fire Ricky Garcia. I heard the criminal investigation from my criminal detectives and quickly understood what was going on and what had occurred. I will still look at the internal complaint when the time is appropriate.
You and I have talked in the past about recruiting and staffing and how hard it is, not just the Pima County Sheriff's Office. This is law enforcement nationwide, to get numbers in. Does this type of incident, as it bubbles through the community in all the different ways it's bubbling, does it make recruiting, especially of women, even harder than you have now?
Well, you know, I guess it could, but here's what I look at. if I don't do what I'm supposed to do by law, by statute, and I just go off on a whim with rumors and that, what harm has that done? We all have court laws, court rules that we are very well aware of. I don't expect the Board of Supervisors, who are really just politicians from various businesses throughout the community, to understand and know all of that. But I do, and I should be expected to. But when the Board of Supervisors, you know, I understand their concerns, just as I would the community's concerns about what they hear and see. But again, I know this case. They do not. And there's reasons for that. It is about the integrity of the investigation. There are reasons we don't put certain information out. What I would tell the board is simply this. If you're so concerned, why wouldn't you call the sheriff? I'm an open book. I could share with them everything I did. In fact, I did share it with one board member who called the sheriff. That's the board member who consistently says, no, we need to let the sheriff do his job. Rex Scott. Now they've created quite a problem with this investigation going forward in the criminal court hearing. Now the defense is going to have their issues to raise, right, and rightfully so now, based on rumor. If you were concerned about the victim, you would clearly understand and know you do not put her statement in jeopardy by saying somebody said something else. Because by doing that, you've made her statement impeachable. That's old school thinking on this. We should be beyond that when it comes to protecting our victims.
When it comes to now the board's action regarding this investigation, a large part of law enforcement, it seems, is trust from the community in what the men and women on the street are doing all the way up to your office.
Without that trust, we can't exist.
How do you keep that trust going when the board is saying, we need an outside investigation? How do we?
The board has the right to ask for whatever they want. They have the right to refuse what their attorney's advice has been. They were advised by not one, not two, three different attorneys from three different offices. They are now asking another attorney, the state attorney general, Ms. Mays. God bless them. I'm not getting in the way of their ask. I'll fully cooperate. I have no problems. I'm just saying what you're doing as a board, asking for these special investigations, creates real problems for the criminal case.
You made the decision to remove deputies from the security detail. A lot of people out in the public said, well, that looks like it, politics.
Yep,
and then you
was.
Changed your mind. Walk us through what
yes,
that was.
Because I do react. I know that. You probably know it. The community knows it. But I look at it and say, wait a minute. Was my reaction wrong? The board does not have the right, no one does, to engage my team in a political campaign. That is by county policy, and rightfully so. But it doesn't just mean the sheriff has to obey them. It means, more importantly, your Board of Supervisors, who have total governance of this county, should be at least paying attention to that. The trust for this community, you asked, how do I ensure their trust? I think it's based on past behavior. We have been open to this community about everything. A group of us sat here and talked about what's the right thing to do. We do that every day in here. All you have to do is the right thing. And we'll make mistakes. I make mistakes. My mistake that day, hey, I'm going to pull my people out of there. But it was a mistake of the head, not the heart. There's a difference. I didn't want Sharon Bronson or anyone from that board, for that matter, to be interjecting their politics into my team. My team's not there for that. What they're there for is to do a job, and that's to keep that boardroom safe. And so recognizing that, I spoke with Ms. Lesher for quite some time and decided we're not going to do this. The sheriff is wrong.
Let's go back to the original case. As you said, the criminal case is proceeding Santa Cruz County. We don't want to lose sight of that incident as the criminal case proceeds. You fired the accused deputy already.
Within 24 hours of the incident. Without any internal investigation.
What do you do going forward to, and I understand, as you said, deputies or people. What do you do going forward to try and ensure this doesn't happen again?
It is really about how you lead. Sometimes we just want to be everybody's friend around here, right? I'm the boss. I don't want to make my employees mad. But what does that do when you have employees who are doing things that they're not supposed to do? What does that tell, if I allow that to occur, what does that tell those who are actually working hard every day? So you have an accountability. I'm sorry, it rests with me. At some point, I wish my other chiefs and their captains and lieutenants could handle those things for me so I don't have to be the bad guy all the time, right? Nobody wants to be the one that has to take the child aside and scold them. But sometimes it does come to me. In this case, this is one of those things that I say, by being a leader, we preach, we try our best, show by example, hold people accountable. Regardless of their rank, you do something wrong, you need to know. The accountability doesn't mean I got to beat you with a stick. It could be saying, I'm disappointed in what you did there. Don't do that again. But it could be you're fired too. So my role here is strictly that. I need to set the example. I'll make mistakes, but there'll be mistakes of the head, never the heart. Ricky Garcia made a mistake of the heart. That's unforgivable. You cannot harm somebody. I had to let the investigation go out, do its course. They came and briefed me the very morning. I said, book them, fire them.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, Sheriff.
Thank you, guys.
That was Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos. Lucas Mulliken is a freelance journalist based out of Flagstaff. Last month, he was traveling home from a reporting trip in Mexico when he came across a scene where a Yuma police officer was trying to detain a man. The Buzz producer, Zach Ziegler, brings us the basics of the incident. A warning, this story includes audio of the incident from police body cameras and Mulliken's phone video.
The evening started when a Yuma business owner called police about a man trespassing and making threats. Yuma Police Chief Thomas Garrity says that, as the responding officer was talking with the business owner, he points out a man whom he says was the offender, and the officer commands the man to stop, looking to detain him so he can ask questions. The man does not stop walking, and the officer gives another command and pursues.
The subject refused.
I'm investigating the crime. It was a trespass. Get over here. Stop right now.
At that point, the officer had to use the minimal amount of force that he could to detain the person so he could investigate the criminal trespass.
This is the scene that Lucas Mulliken comes across while driving by.
So really quickly, I got into the turn lane, pulled over, and started to realize that this was like someone crying for help. Someone yelling out as a police officer was just, you know, shoving them to the ground. The police officer kept saying, you know, you're not under arrest.
You're detained for trespassing.
For what? Trespassing where?
Yes. Mulliken begins asking questions about what's going on.
The officer does answer, hands on.
What have I done? What have I done?
3-3-3. Back up.
What have I done?
Back up. I'll give you everything. Back up.
Mr. Mulliken doesn't agree with the answers, and so he's telling him, you can't do that, you can't do that.
Why? Because he's not listening to me.
No, that's not the option. What are you arresting him for?
And he's in a very close proximity to the officer, to where the officer didn't feel safe.
The man is shouting much of the time.
He'll take me to undisclosed location, and then fucking take me apart, put me on your goddamn political bullshit.
He was, you know, in a mental health crisis, basically saying, don't take me, don't take me away, don't lock me in a box, just very sounded unwell.
The video shows that Mulliken often stays multiple feet away, but the officer and the man move, and the man screams. So sometimes things get closer.
So he's asking Mr. Mulliken's and his girlfriend to back up. Never asked them to stop recording.
Mulliken says he did so.
You know, I have years of experience working with law enforcement, so I have an understanding about, you know, what they expect in these situations. So I didn't, you know, run in and stand over him. I, you know, was giving him well more than a body length's kind of space.
The amount the situation was moving then settles down because
person wraps his legs around the fence posts.
I said nicely, take my razor. What are you doing?
To keep from being able to be taken to the car.
No, dude. I'm using the COVID sign. I'm going to apply pressure here. It's going to hurt. Why are you trying to hurt me?
Two more officers arrive while this is going on. At this time, Mulliken is multiple feet away and around the corner of the fence.
he tells the officer 6 feet.
Back up right now. 6 feet, you know the law.
Back up.
Back am up. I interfering with your investigation?
Yes.
How?
Yeah. Back up.
And guess that's all said throughout the video, 6 feet. There is no law that says 6 feet, 8 feet. The court decisions are based upon the officer being able to operate safely and fear for his safety.
Mulliken is far enough away that a fourth officer can step between him and the situation.
And so I look up, I'm like, oh, I need to move back. So I start scooting back another foot or two and immediately look up, and this officer is moving towards me, and he says,
excuse me, it's 6 feet.
But apparently it wasn't fast enough for this officer, because he just ran up and shoved me to the ground.
You know, the body camera doesn't really capture how that happens. Mr. Mulkins is claiming that he was shoved to the ground.
The officer does tell him,
get on the ground, sir. Well, I have not done anything wrong.
You stay there.
I look over at the officer and go, hey, what's your name and badge number?
What's your badge number, officer?
He completely ignores me. At this time, he's probably about 8 to 9 feet away, walking straight back to the scene, ignoring me. I'm not posing any threat to him. So at that time, I go,
badge number, officer.
You're under arrest.
Why? Because, excuse me.
The video shows Mulliken had taken a step forward as he got up, but was not walking back into the scene.
That's when the officer turns around and places him under arrest for failure to comply with the city code, which is, I know the wording is bad as far as the title of it, of obedience to officers, but it is to fail to obey a lawful order.
Sir,
you're not going to stand on top of us while we're walking.
No, I was
put your hand behind your back.
Okay, officer, let me have my phone, please.
Reaching for my phone was the first thing he reached for. He said, give me your phone. And so, you know, knowing that police have been known to delete footage and things like that, I turned off the screen on my phone and stopped the recording.
Loosen this hand up.
Mulliken struggles while he tried to do that, and the officer shoves him to the ground. He eventually complies.
There you go. Thank you. All right. Look, please, you need to understand, I didn't do anything wrong.
No,
I just,
you did. You absolutely did.
He's handcuffed and placed in the back of the squad car. He's cited and released. No trip to jail for booking. For The Buzz, I'm Zach Ziegler.
We spoke with Yuma Police Chief Thomas Garrity for his perspective on the incident.
Every incident is different. If I'm just sitting here talking to somebody, and you're standing next to the person, or you're standing next to me, and there's no danger or physical confrontation going on, that distance could be a foot. But if we're having a physical confrontation with that individual, that distance becomes greater. And that, again, physical confrontations don't happen in a very small area. Sometimes they go longer and stuff. But it's also, you know, we don't know if that person has a weapon that we're fighting with. I guess it's common sense. To me, is what it comes down to. If you're seeing an officer struggling with an individual, well, you know, how's this struggle going on? Does the officer need help? That's another one. And then you can ask questions after. Again, you know, we train our officers, you know, that journalists are allowed to do this, but you have to do it to where you're not interfering with the police doing their duties. After September of last year is when Arizona came out with the 8 feet, right around that time. We immediately, our city attorney immediately came out with the legal opinion of, yes, while this is what the law is, we are not going to follow that because we don't think it's constitutional to say only 8 feet.
You all posted the body cam videos and Mr. Mulliken's video. To someone who's just watching them and doesn't necessarily have all the context, some may see the arrest of Mr. Mulliken when he asks the second time for the officer's badge number and that officer spins around and immediately arrests him. May see that as retaliatory because he was away at that point. How do you react to that charge?
Well, I can see the perspective, but like we say, the body camera does not capture everything that the officer sees or hears. So the officer is actually facing away from Mr. Mulliken's when that happens. And so, does the officer let him come all the way back up to where it becomes a danger? Or does he try and take care of that problem immediately to cease it? And to me, that's what the officer did, was to stop the problem from occurring again. But I understand people's perspective.
So one of the things that it seemed to have been at least the original subject of the interaction was talking about was detention versus arrest. From a legal standpoint, what is the difference between detention and arrest and when someone's handcuffed and things like that?
So there's different legal standards on what officers can do as far as when we have reasonable suspicion to believe that a crime has been committed, going to be committed, they have a legal justification to detain someone. And that is for investigative detention. And they have the legal right to use the force necessary to effect that detention. When we arrest somebody and tell them they're under arrest, we have to have probable cause, which means the crime probably happened. Basically, I always like to say 50.01% that this person committed the crime that they're investigating.
You all chose to release the videos, put them up on YouTube for anybody who wanders through YouTube to find. Why'd you do that?
So it's one is that we want to be transparent. And there was some question on what the officer's actions were that day. And in order, in today's day and age, we want to be transparent. And it's here it all is for everybody to see. You see both sides. And you make your own determination for the public. And the public has a right to know what the police department's doing. So whether that's a citizen journalist, whether that's just somebody standing there filming, or whether that's our body cameras, that we're going to be as open and transparent as we possibly can.
When you get incidents like this, especially ones that you've posted and have gained public interest, is there a mandatory or just it happens discussion and review with the officers not only involved, but the officers within your department? Let's review what happened here. What could we have done better? What did we do well? What did we not do well in this incident or any others?
So that's done almost on a daily basis with the supervisors, is that they do body camera review. One is that is in our policy that we'll do body camera review. When we review the video, it's like, hey, so everybody sees what's going on. You know, what are things that you would have done different? What are things that they did right? What are things that they did wrong? It's with every video we do this, not just this one. That way the officers understand when they come into a situation like this, what can we do? And just so it's another way of to refresh on the different policies. And again, not just this video. We do it all the time as far as that goes.
We conclude this week with an interview with Lucas Mulliken, the journalist who was arrested.
I think journalism a lot of times is just meant to, you know, increase transparency, increase people knowing what's going on in their communities. So I feel like my journalistic and my moral imperative both kicked in on equal levels. So, you know, seeing the situation, I'm not here to interfere. I'm not here to tell the officer how to do his job. I'm just here to document, because a lot of times, as much as, you know, police body camera footage is out there and can be made available through records requests and different things, it's not, you know, creating an equalizer in this situation. So I was there on the street documenting because, you know, it's my journalistic and moral imperative to basically, you know, let people know what's going on in their communities. And I wouldn't have gotten out of the car if I didn't feel like something was wrong.
So after you were arrested and they put you in the back of a police vehicle, did things calm down? Did they talk to you at all? Did cooler heads start to prevail, or was it sight release? Hey, you get out of here.
The officer was very, you know, insistent upon the fact that I was interfering and the fact that I was there by documenting was getting in the way of police activity. And that's just not true. If I had been, you know, interfering, I would have been charged with obstruction. I would be facing additional charges. This was just basically his way to try to feel, you know, okay in this situation. And that's just not correct. According to the Ninth Circuit Court, you can't just tell people to stop filming or to move away from a scene to stop filming unless they're obstructing you. And we've deposed the officers that were there on the scene, and none of them spoke to there being any training in Yuma PD as far as what to do when being filmed, what to do when interacting with journalists, and, you know, having them basically saying, okay, you know, where's your comfort level when it comes to being filmed as you're doing your work. And one of the officers said, you know, if I'm not comfortable with you, you have to be a block away. But if I'm comfortable with you, you can be right there next to me. And so it's really not up for an officer to try to codify the law. You know, so we need definitions. And since the 8-foot law was kind of struck down here in Arizona,
right about that time, it was in court, it was on hold.
Yeah, there's no codified law here in Arizona when it comes to like a set 6 or 8 or 15 feet away from an officer's, you know, interaction with a suspect.
What was the legal outcome of this? You also mentioned depositions.
Yes. So the legal outcome for my criminal case was that I took a deferred prosecution. This was my second plea offer from the prosecutor there in Yuma. The first plea offer, you know, had me serving, you know, pleading guilty and serving, I believe, over a month in jail. And, you know, for documenting unprofessional activity, for documenting police violence, and then to have the city official not come to you with questions, not come to you in any other way, but to make me responsible for this, it really, I took offense to it.
So we talked with the Yuma police chief. Obviously, no surprise, he doesn't believe the officers did anything wrong, or at least he's not going to say that in an interview. But he said, oh yeah, we review body camera footage all the time of our officers. We talk with them about what to do if people are documenting and things like that. That doesn't sound like what you heard when you deposed officers under oath.
Yeah. My criminal defense lawyer spoke with 5 of the officers there on site. And from those depositions, all of them basically said that they don't remember receiving any training as far as what to do when being filmed or interacting with a journalist, or they just simply didn't receive any training.
At the end of the video that Yuma PD published, so the video that we've seen, and it was body cam video at the end, it sounded like you were apologizing as they were putting you into the back of a vehicle. Did we interpret that video correctly? And if so, what were you saying I'm sorry for?
Yeah, my apologies were more to the fact that this officer got upset and the fact that he felt the need to violate my rights. I didn't feel like I was, you know, in the wrong in any way. I was more just apologizing for him that he got so emotionally frustrated that he had to charge and assault a citizen there on the street.
If you had to do it all over again, we're in Tucson tonight, maybe in Tucson, or you get back to Yuma or something like that, and you see the same situation, same actions again with the benefit of hindsight, or what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes back to my work as a journalist, and this is what I have to do to keep, you know, people in my community accountable. I live up north in Flagstaff, and the same thing. I've seen situations, whether it be a bar fight, whether it be, you know, a DUI that's turning aggressive, whatever, I will stand back and I'll document. I have had so much better interactions with Flagstaff police because, you know, they're interested in the footage. They will be there, you know, hey, we're not bothering them, so they'll let us film and stuff. So I think in general, if I was driving down the road again, saw the same scene, that I would react the same way. You know, keeping, maybe giving a foot or two more space just so these officers can feel comfortable. But in general, I'm there to document and keep people accountable. And so if I have to get, you know, arrested or assaulted again because I'm holding my, you know, officials or police officers accountable for their actions, then that's totally fine. I'm here and this is my my career.
All right. Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me.
That was freelance journalist Lucas Mulliken. And that's The Buzz for this week. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer, with production help from Desiree Tucker and Carly Siegel. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.